Sean from Spinal Empty Soul here in beautiful St. Louis, Missouri at Firebrand Recording, which is a wonderful studio here, tracking our new record, Swan Song, which will start to be released one song at a time here in probably about June, and then the whole thing will come out at the end of the year. So keep your ears peeled for it and check it out when it comes out.
It's your favorite comedian, Anthony Rogers, live in his tour bus. Yeah, but also, you need to get a beard like this. People have been talking. They said your shit looks whack. It looks weird. They can't tell your pronouns. You need to get a beard like this right now. And the only way to do that is by using Luxurious Bastard Beard Oil. Great smell, great function, great everything. Just get this, and there's directions on how to use it if you know how to read. But use the link in the description. Go to the website. Use promo code LEGENDARY, get a discount, do it, thank you, boom.
Hi, I'm Danny from 710 Glass. Come check my shop out. This is our Capone rig, 10 mil joint, smoke out of his head.
I'm AJ over at 710. This is our Puffco selection. This is a Peak Pro. It is completely Bluetooth compatible to your phone. You can control it completely from your phone. Lights, how long you want your session duration, what you want it to burn at.
Hi, I'm Jay at 710. Come check out our large selection of American hand pipes and American made glass.
Dude, we have everything.
Welcome back to the best show in the entire universe. How are you doing today?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. We have an absolute legendary guest. This guy is like a part of American history at this point, I guess, and culture, and like just a lot of stories, like pop culture too. Like a rapper stole his name. Like that's like imagine it's a rapper stealing your name. Like how crazy, like that would be. It was just like that's a crazy accomplishment, I think, you know. That was crazy.
Yeah, it says a lot about you as a person if someone needs to.
That's crazy. Dude. That's crazy. But dude, yeah. Rick Ross, the original, the actual Rick Ross. How you doing, brother? Can you hear me?
Oh. Can you hear us?
Oh. Hey, what's up? Someone's up the audio, I think, or something. I might have to come back. I can even come back. I think it would fix it. You hear me?
Oh.
Yeah, the audio. You can't hear the audio.
Oh.
That's the fastest way to do it. It's like, yeah, come back in probably if you can hear this.
Yeah.
But, no, it seems crazy big.
Okay. Can you hear us?
Yeah, you can. You may have to come back. You may have to even come back in because it's the... Because your audio is weird.
Right.
I can't. Wait, no, I heard you there. Whoa, I heard you there.
Say something?
Yep.
Okay, right, now we hear you.
Now
okay,
we got cool. Audio.
One second. I need 2 minutes.
Okay, yeah, that's take your time.
That's funny, man. No, I love the vibe, dude. That's funny. This is like blowing up a roll right now. It's got I'm trying to get off the Wi-Fi. It's got a shit ton of people watching on Rumble. It's crazy.
Some people, fans, followers, nobodies, somebodies. I don't know. What's up?
Thousand people watching around. So no, it's the story's crazy. Like he's part of that whole crack thing in the '90s. I think it was a was a crazy story. Like,
that's awesome. What, you know, when I did drugs, I used to love crack. I fucking loved crack when I did drugs.
Not as much.
I'm just gonna be honest. Like,
not as much.
People say crack is whack, but they're wrong. Because crack is awesome. Yeah. Okay.
It's crack. There's like a crack infomercial. It's like, well, if you guys are looking.
All right, I'm back. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Welcome back.
That was my brother. He wasn't going to stop calling until.
Oh, it's okay. I was just telling him how much I love crack. So you're good. I used to be heavy into drugs, and when I did drugs, crack was definitely up there.
I used to be,
but obviously I don't fuck with that shit anymore. But you know, once upon a time.
Yeah, I used to be heavy into drugs too. On the other end, though. On the other end.
Okay. Yeah. 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 You're like, I was making money. I wasn't losing everything. I'm like, yeah. I was like,
you look too pretty to be
able to get ever, more of this.
You're too pretty to ever been on drugs.
Man, you used to see me when I was, you should have seen me when I was on drugs. Goddamn. Yeah. It's all good, though.
You look better?
Yeah, I look better.
Dude, that's so funny, right?
I didn't have as many teeth I had to brush. So, yeah, it was great.
Made life easier.
It did.
How much were you making a day, man? Like, they said you're making like millions a day or something.
Yeah, my last 2 years, I did at least $1 million every day. And some days, I had a couple days, I did $3 million, 3.2, 3.5.
Oh, what was that like getting $1 million a day? What's that feeling like?
Well, would you figure if you go from being so poor that, you know, you had to eat sugar syrups and Hungry Jack biscuits, you know, for the day, then all of a sudden now you got enough money, you buy whatever you want. It's a big change.
Is it like almost like a shock to like the way you live? Like, is it, do you change social classes so quickly that it's like kind of a mind fuck?
Well, you know, I never really changed. I just started making money.
You know,
at a young age, I started to realize when you don't have money in this country, you may not get to eat, you know, you may not have a place to sleep. And I didn't want to be in that position. So, I started selling drugs, but it didn't change. It didn't really change my perception of life. You know, I still felt the same way about people. You know, I feel that everybody's important. You know, I don't care if you don't have a nickel in your pocket. You're still just as important as, you know, Donald Trump or Bill Gates or any of the rest of these rich motherfuckers who, you know, think that they're better than everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, money don't make you special.
You're definitely right. Yeah, it's not like a sense of worth as much as it just like, I was just trying to think about making $1 million a day. And I mean, that's a goal of mine. So that's crazy you achieved that. And like, that's a lot of money in a short amount of time, man. I think I would have gave up 20 days in, man. You know, it's like, I just would have been like, oh, I made 20 million. I'm done. You know, it's like, I guess I'm done, you know. That's crazy.
But you know, like, what happens is it becomes addictive.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's not about the money anymore. You know, when I started, you know, my goal was to make $5,000 and then I was going to quit. But
But crack was so then, fucking good that.
And then when you get 5,000, you say, I might as well make 20. Because, you know, I never knew at one time, I didn't know what 20,000 was.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't fathom what $20,000 was. You talking about somebody who had never had $300 and then now, you know, they're dealing with thousands, you know, it's like, wow. And then you start thinking about thousands. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden you find out that there's a such thing called millions. So you just keep going and going and going. And it's like chasing, you know, it's like chasing a ghost, you know, you just keep chasing
the dragon.
Yeah, you run around the house trying to catch it, and it can't be caught.
What are some things you buy going from like being like growing up poor? And I grew up in a trailer too, so I kind of grew up poor too. But what was the transition like? Or not transition? Like, what were some stuff you'd buy going from like when you first started making money and stuff, like houses, like cars? What was your thing?
Well, the first big thing I bought was a piece of property to build a motel. You know, my mom put me out the house, and when she put me out, I had a little money already. You know, I think I almost had $100,000, and so I was living in motels. You know, I didn't care. You know, motels was a step up compared to what my mom's garage used to be. So I was living in motels, and then it would be some nights that I would go to check in a motel, and it wouldn't be any rooms. And I was going, wow, this little bitty room, they're getting $45 a night, and you can't get one. Why don't I build a motel?
You're like, I'll just get my own.
And then I set out to build my motel, and that was the first big item that I ever bought. You know, I bought a bunch of cars, you know, basically just get around cars, nothing really fancy. I learned not to be flashy and exciting, you know, to try
and then
to
get robbed.
Yeah, get robbed and go to prison.
Yeah, true.
Both of those.
That part.
Both of those I didn't want.
Right.
So you know, I kind of stayed low key, you know, not dressing up. And then my mom was real strict too. You know, my mom was one of those diehard Christians, you know, and she had no problem using the whip. You know, she would whip you with a telephone card or extension card or a broomstick, you know, whatever she could get her hands on, you was getting hit with it. So
yeah. My mom used a spatula. The wooden spoon. Oh man, that one hurt. Fuck.
Crazy. Yeah, so you know, I would hide my wealth from my mom.
Yeah.
That's funny. But, you were young when you did this, right? Like, how old were you, like, when you started, like, popping off and stuff?
I started about 19, you know, just before I was turning 20.
That's crazy, young to have all that, like, power and money. That's nuts.
Yeah.
I built the motel, I think, at, like, 22,
23. 22? You bought, and what'd you name the motel?
Freeway Motor Inn.
It's awesome,
just like
man.
My dispensary is called Freeway Rick's.
Nice.
Yeah, tell us about that. So tell us about your dispensary. Where's that at?
It's in Sun Valley, California. I've been open 3 months now. Really excited about it. It's almost like selling cocaine, right? So
legal this time, all right? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's legal this time. I got a letter from the governor and a letter from the mayor saying that it's okay for you to sell weed. And I was like, yeah.
That's so funny, man. Like,
you know, I get him a thumbs up.
So what's that like having a dispensary now? Like, kind of playing the game that way. Like, what's that? Are you in the store? That are they buying weed from you personally? That's kind of funny. Like,
sometimes I'm there. I'm not there all the time. You know, I still have to do my other stuff with the books and. I have to go out and do my motivational speaking and, you know, talking to people about drugs and gangs. Because, you know, one time I went to be a gang member.
Motivational speaking is about turning people off of drugs and, like...
Well, you know, I don't really tell people don't use drugs. You know, what I try to do is tell them what I saw people who use drugs, you know.
Yeah.
You can't tell people what to do. People are going to do what they want to do, you know.
Right.
I believe if people have the right information, they'll make the right decisions.
Yeah.
So I basically just try to give out the information. I talk to them about prison, you know, what it's like, you know, what you're going to be looking at if you, you know, you go to prison for selling drugs.
Then, yeah.
You know, you could possibly get a life sentence without the possibility of parole. Somebody would have told me that when I was out selling drugs, I wouldn't have believed it. It was only when the judge took the hammer and go life without the possibility of parole that I really understood that, yes, you can get life without the possibility of parole for just selling drugs, even if you don't kill anybody, if nobody got hurt.
So, wow. Is that what you got sentenced with?
Yeah, I had a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
So then how did you get out?
Well, I taught myself how to read and write when I was in prison. You know, I was a totally illiterate. I was totally illiterate when I went to prison. But people in prison explained to me that the way out of prison was through the law library. So the only way I could use the law library was if I learned to read and write.
Wow. That's wild.
So what did I do? I learned how to read and write. And I found a loophole that eventually got me out of prison.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yes. So had I not learned how to read and write, I'd still be in prison maybe today.
Wow. Yeah. It's sad to think that there's probably so many people there that like are so close to being able to find a loophole, but just because they might not know the right information or know the right thing that they could end up being stuck in that same situation.
Well, you know what happens is most people depend on their lawyers.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, people go to court and they have public defenders, and these public defenders have such big caseloads that they don't really have the time to give your case that personal touch that that it needs. And I was just lucky that somebody told me that my case needs personal touch. And
yeah,
I found out that the person that needed to be given it the personal touch was me.
Interesting.
And that's kind of how I deal with life right now. You know, I believe that my life needs a personal touch, and the best person to give it that personal touch is myself. So I constantly stay on my own back and push myself to do things that that I know I should be doing.
That's awesome.
So are you Christian now?
No.
I was wondering. Yeah, I didn't know. What are your beliefs now? Like, where are you? Do you believe in God and stuff? Like,
not really.
I was wondering. Yeah, no. No. Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I look at life like, you know, like if there was a God, would He allow some of the things that happen in the world happen? You know, if we had this great just person that was totally knowing and knew all and saw all, would He allow some newborn baby to get burned up in a house, you know, some innocent baby? And I mean, it's just so many things that happen to people that, and this is just my personal opinion, that I don't feel should have happened to them, because they never had an opportunity to harm anybody or to really do any wrong. And, you know, we know stories of so many young kids and babies that terrible things happen to that don't deserve it. So, you know, those type of things make me question the philosophy of somebody up in the sky that knows all and sees all.
That makes sense.
I mean, why did He touch me with that magic thing where I could, you know, make all the money and then I could help all the people? Because that's really what I would like to do. You know, I would like to help more people. I would like to be of assistance to more people. Even when I sold drugs, and this is going to sound twisted, so don't think that I'm not twisted, because I know that I am. I thought I was doing a good deed. I thought I was assisting people and having fun. You know, when I first started selling drugs, everybody who came to buy drugs was partying and laughing. Oh, we're going to turn out tonight. We're going to tear the club up. We're going to blow some cocaine and we're going to smoke the pipe. And I was like, wow, look at what I just did. I just helped their night, you know. So, you know, our minds can be twisted sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, it probably is like that. A lot of drugs, too, you know? So, I mean, it just... And the person... I don't know. Or you just have to like,
I don't think that makes you a bad person because you make a mistake.
Right.
I believe in redemption. Mistakes.
Yeah, no, I believe in redemption and all that. I believe in... And I think you're right about helping people. I think that's the main purpose of life, you know? I think it really... the older I get, the more I realize that. It's just like the more people you can help, you know?
What are we doing here, you know? What are we doing here? Just... To collect a pile of paper and and gold and coins and drive big cars so we can snob our nose at all the people who don't have it, you know, and yeah. Not me. I'm not with that. You know, yeah, I believe that we're all equal and that we all are special in some way, some form.
Yeah.
Earth's flat for sure, man. It's all just like everyone has like all different. No, you're right, man. It's good. That's a very positive message. I love hearing that, man, to be honest. That's like a, that's a good positive message, man. Like, so what's your life like now, man? I know the story and stuff, and I know that. And like, I mean, you got a Netflix documentary, right? I mean, mini series or something too out, I think, on you, man. So I mean, I think a lot of people like know the story and stuff. What's your days like now, man? Like, what kind of person are you now?
Wow, busy all the time. I'm loving life. I mean, you know, when you get a life sentence, it's like you really lose your life. You know, you figure. You know, we used to make fun of ourselves when we were in prison, and we were in these buildings that probably like 4 feet thick concrete walls, and they got these big thick bars on it, and we said this was our tomb. You know, this where we were buried at, that we were dead. And to get out of that tomb and to be alive is like being resurrected, you know?
Yeah. Second chance.
Yeah, I haven't had a bad day really since I've been home. You know, a couple sad, but not really a bad day. You know, things didn't go my way every day. But at the end of the day, I understand that I've had lower points than I could ever have on the streets when I was in prison. So
yeah.
Every day is just like exciting, man. Like, wow, the sun is up again. Let's go. Let's get it.
That's awesome.
And I'm doing anything from acting to motivational speaking with kids at high schools, junior high schools. I have two kids, 11-year-old and a 13-year-old that play tennis. So I'm on the tennis course teaching them. And every now and then I get out and try to hit a few balls with them for about 5 minutes. taking my walks, just really, you know, just allowing myself to enjoy this wonderful life that we have.
Yeah. So do you think getting locked up gave you like a whole new appreciation for just life in general?
Oh, correct. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. You know what people always say, you never miss it until it's gone.
Right. You don't know what you have until it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Right. But so once you lose this freedom that we have.
Yeah.
And then you realize what a wonderful life is. Well, what it was, you know, because you don't have anymore. You know,
right.
Now you're in a maybe 8x12 cell. Steel toilet. You're in a cell with a guy that you don't know who may not shower, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you just start to remember the little bitty things that you thought didn't really matter. I was in a high rise for 3 years. No grass, no dirt, no trees. So I started missing that kind of stuff just to be able to touch the dirt. You know, when I finally got to the penitentiary and to go out and touch some dirt and grass and just take my shoes off and walk on some grass was like, wow, what a beautiful. Yeah. And then, you know, in the pen, we don't have trees, so you don't get to see trees anymore.
Damn.
You know, just
the little things
that we all take for granted.
Right.
Becomes important to us.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole prison system is pretty, it sucks to really when you kind of really start understanding like what's happening, especially where it's like, okay, if you don't make a certain amount of money, then you're never going to be able to get bail. You're never going to have the right lawyer. Like you're kind of just like fucked essentially. And so it fucks over like this whole lower class of people that grew up in poverty or don't have the education to really take care of themselves or get a job. Or once they got, you know, a strike on the record, then they could never get a job again. And it's kind of like this cycle. I'm sure you're more than, oh shit. But it's just sad that it's like, then you get stuck in there and you don't get access to certain, my friend said that he got brain damage because there wasn't something to do with like the color scheme. Like you don't see certain colors anymore. So then when you get out, your mind almost like trips out from seeing certain colors, or like it just deprives your mind of like, it could just give you brain damage essentially is what my friend was explaining to me. Which I'm like, great, so you're there to get rehabilitated to be a better version of yourself, but you come out with all these other issues that make it even hard. Like, was it hard for you to, like, reintegrate back into regular life after being in there for a while?
I don't know. I'm kind of weird.
Join the club.
I'm by myself most of the time, you know. I find myself riding in the car by myself, going most of the places by myself. So I don't know. Maybe I'm still institutionalized. You know, it's hard to really say, you know, I don't know if it's because people don't want to be around me or I don't want people around me. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes I just be riding and be like, why are you always by yourself? You know, so
yeah.
Prison definitely plays a major effect on us so many ways. And maybe one day they'll start to do studies to see how that affects us. I believe that our system should have some type of program where you can almost like graduate, where you can show your rehabilitation.
Right.
Because, you know, it don't take 20 years or 30 years for a person to realize that they made a mistake and say that I'm never going to do that again.
Right. Plus, it just costs so much to keep that many people.
Especially if it's not a violent crime.
Right.
Now, you know, if somebody's going around and they're sticking guns in people's faces and they're raping women and kids, and I look at those crimes totally different.
Right. But
when you're talking about crimes of economic crimes, you know, where somebody is really just trying to make a buck.
Right. They're trying to survive.
Yes. I don't think that those are the same type of crimes. Are crimes that, you know, should be incarcerated for the rest of your life or 30 years or 40 years. I don't think that that's the case.
Yeah. Definitely needs to be some reevaluating with just the way the whole system is kind of set up, honestly.
Well, you know, I think it's time to change the guards. You know, we've even had these old politicians who have been making policy for all of us, you know, some of them been on Congress and the Senate for 30, 40 years. I think it's time for people who have actually caught the bus, you know, who had to sit at the bus stop, who had to, you know, ride their bike to work, you know, who had a son that went to prison. You know, I think those are the kind of people who have really experienced life should be able to help make these decisions that they're making for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. People that have been in the shoes of the like what the majority of our population have gone through. It's kind of like if you were in the 1% your whole life, you can't really, it's not that you don't want to, you just literally can't relate to people who have like grown up and had to go through shit. You know what I mean?
They didn't have milk. You know, they probably didn't have milk in the refrigerator. You know, like, oh, we didn't have milk. You know, oh yeah, we was hungry before. You know, like,
right.
We was waiting on payday because we needed food. So, you know, if you never experienced those things, how could you be making decisions for people who have actually had to live through that? You
know? Right, right.
So don't judge me.
Right. Well, really what it comes with is a whole other level of empathy when you've actually been through the same thing, as opposed to just seeing it from a completely different perspective where you haven't gone through anything like that. It's hard to empathize, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, that's what I pretty much want to dedicate my life to, educating the people about, you know, that there's more than one view. You know, your view is your view, but there may be the right view.
Mm. Yeah.
So you said you were in a lot of gangs and stuff. Like, what, like back in the day, like two-part question, like, is that true? And what would you advise the people not to do that, you know? Like,
no, I never joined a gang. I wanted to be a gang member when I was about.
I wanted to be. Okay, I didn't know. I didn't know.
I was a wannabe gang member. Hey, you never heard of that? You never heard of a wannabe? Yeah, I was a wannabe gang member. I was too young though. My mom was really strict, so
she would have whooped your ass, huh?
Told me up. I would have been a gang member, all right. I'd have been gang busted. My mom didn't have no problem.
That's so funny.
So I was like 12 years old, and I wanted to be a Crip, but mom wasn't having it. And then I got lucky. Before I got old enough to really like buck moms, somebody put a tennis racket in my hand and I started playing tennis. So,
tennis
saved me. Ha.
There you go.
Shout out to tennis.
You used to be a boxer. All right, you're a pro boxer too? Were you a trained boxer?
No, I manage boxers.
Oh, okay, you manage boxers?
Yeah, I got into boxing for the same thing, you know. I see these guys making all this money and then they wind up broke at the end of their career. And I was like, what?
Yeah, fuck.
How can you make $600 million and be broke? So, you know, I said, you know what? I'm going to get in and help these guys take care of their money, show them how to invest their money, and show them how to grow. So I manage about 6 fighters right now. Trying to sign about 4 or 5 of the amateurs that came out this year.
That's awesome.
And you know, I got my book too. Ooh. Well, I already got 3 books, but I think I only got one here at the house. This is my autobiography. I wrote this when I was in prison. I was in prison, and I didn't know if I was ever getting out. And I said, you know what? The world needs to know how you got started selling drugs, why you sold drugs, and why other people sell drugs.
There you go.
Also, kids needed to know what was going to happen to them if they started selling drugs. So I wrote this book.
Right.
What? Someone in the comments asking, what do you think of the Tyson Jake Paul fight?
It's gonna be entertaining, I guess. You know, Tyson's an old man, and Jake's a YouTube star, sensation. But you know they're gonna entertain the fans and I think that it's not bad for them to be entertaining the fans. You know, it's show business. Boxing is show business.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people gotta realize about it, is that at the end of the day it's show business, and show business is supposed to be entertaining and supposed to be something that, you know, fans can come and take their minds off of the everyday hustle and bustle.
Do you think Tyson has it in him to take him? I bet he destroy him.
If he hits him.
Yeah.
You know, Tyson, you know, when I did the hot box with Mike Tyson, and his fist was so damn big, I was like, what the hell? That's
crazy. Well, what's it like being around that guy, man? I didn't know you're on that show. That's gotta be nuts being around that guy.
And his fist is like a sack of rocks. But you know, those boxers' hands are so hard, you know, because they're always punching on stuff and hitting hard stuff. So their hands are really hard. You know, I shook hands with quite a few of those guys. Terrence Crawford, I shook his hands, and his hands are just so hard, you know, like, you know, if you get hit with it, it's like getting hit with a lead pipe or something. So,
yeah, I can only beat Tyson when I had air support. Like, I think I need like air support to beat Tyson. I don't think there's another way I could ever beat that guy. That guy's just a monster fighting, probably, man. Like, I can. It's like all he does, man.
I wouldn't fight Tyson for $50 million.
I wouldn't. No, dude. I don't
get hurt. You might get brain damage and never be the same again.
And not be able to use the money, huh?
Tyson destroyed all 3 of us.
Jake Paul has done an amazing job with his career, you know, with the way he's coming to boxing. And he's won some fights that you know, people didn't think he could win. So, you know, you got to give him his kudos for the job that he's done to start so late in boxing and to have accomplished some of the things that he's accomplished. But, you know, you talking about going in there with Mike Tyson, you know, some people say he, I remember one time, who was this one? One boxer say he hit like a mule kicks. I never been kicked by a mule, but I can only imagine.
It's like a small horse, right? I mean, yeah. The size of a small horse, essentially. Yeah.
No, not a mule. A mule is a big horse.
Oh.
He's bigger and stronger than a horse. You know, the mule is a crossbreed between a horse and a donkey.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what it is.
So he's really, really strong. He can't.
That's like
he can't
reach terrifying. Him.
Yes.
No, it so is terrifying.
You get kicked by that thing, you're gonna go down. If Jake Paul get hit by Mike Tyson, he going down.
Yeah, no. If anybody gets hit, that guy's just a born killer, man. Like I wouldn't even. You know what I mean? It's like that's all that guy did forever. I would never. I would compete with the guy.
I mean, you'd have to be pretty delusional to think that you could.
Yeah.
At that point, you're just too dumb to live and just let nature take its course. You know what I mean? Like,
you gonna go to the fight?
Me?
I want to. When is it?
I don't know when it is. I haven't been really paying attention to it. I've been this dispensary been having me like bamboozled and you know, just trying to figure out how to make this thing work. I'm surrounded by 15 dispensaries. You know, they gave out so many licenses now, it's like the wild, wild west. We all just like shooting it out, you know, like who's gonna get the customers? So I just been trying to figure out how I can outdo my competitors. I mean, to me, it's like playing chess, you know, like move this piece over here, move that piece over there. Ah, catch a queen. Game over.
True that.
So I'm really just having fun with it. But at the end of the day, you know, I hate to lose. You know, I hate to lose in chess. I hate to lose in tennis. I hate to lose in basketball. I just don't like losing. I want to be a winner. So I've been putting a lot of my energy into this dispensary. So one of the things that I'm getting ready to do, I'm getting ready to have this big domino tournament.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm going to have a big domino tournament at my dispensary where I'm going to find out who's the best domino player in California.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. And, hell yeah.
You know, trying to do stuff like that just to bring people to my place so they can hang out, you know, play dominoes and
that's awesome. That's a great way to promote, for sure.
Yeah, because, you know, the cannabis is so restricted on how you can market. You know, you can't market like we would market. You know, like my book. I could just walk on the street with my book and go like, hey, buy my book. But with cannabis, nope, you can't do it.
They can't walk around and be like, hey, here's a nug. Come through. Here's a free sample.
You know what I wanted to do? I was going to get me a nug, a suit made, and make it look like a nug. And then just go in the corner and be like, come and get your nugs now.
That probably worked, honestly.
It would have worked. Oh, I thought it was a great idea, but they was like, oh, no, you can't do that. You're going to get fined.
Oh, shit.
What if a kid see a dancing nug dancing down the street? So,
I never thought of that. Forgot about all the children.
Yes, you have to do it while school is in.
Right.
And then kids might be ditching, so.
Oh, man, there's just no winning, huh? Fuck.
But that's how my life has been, you know, like one roller coaster after the next. But it's been a wonderful life. I met some great people in my lifetime. I wouldn't trade my life for nobody in the world's life. You know, even my prison time, I cherish those moments, you know, that I was able to be in prison because I do understand that everybody can't go to prison. And it was an experience, you know, that I wouldn't give back if I could.
Yeah. Well, it's like for me personally, like, you know, we were just talking about drugs and stuff. And it's like, you know, being a drug addict, obviously, like those were the hardest years of my life, but I wouldn't go back and change anything, because I felt like I had to go through all those trials and tribulations to learn all of the lessons I came here to learn and to grow and evolve into the person that I am now. And I wouldn't be this person if I didn't go through all those, you know, trials and tribulations. And I think that as even though going through pain is, you know, the shitty part of life, like, you don't really like gain any substance to your personality unless you go through pain.
Yeah.
Because when you meet someone who hasn't gone through pain, it's like there's no depth. You know what I mean? It's like they don't really, their level for empathy is not as deep as it could be had they gone through some heavy shit. And I think that that makes people into a more well-rounded person, essentially.
Absolutely. You know what? I want to ask you something that I always ask when I go and talk to kids, you know, that has been on drugs or somebody that's been on drugs.
Yeah.
And most of the time, what they tell me is that I ask them, I said, how did you start using drugs? And most of them say it was a family member, mother, mm-hmm. father, uncle, brother, sister, wow. or a close friend that got them started. How did you okay. get started?
I started getting high by myself, actually.
Yeah?
Like super addict behavior from the get-go, yeah. I don't know. So I had a really traumatic childhood, so I was just looking for ways to numb myself.
Say that again.
I had a really traumatic. No, you're good. I had a really traumatic childhood, so oh. I was kind of going out of my way to look for ways to kind of numb myself. And so, like, there was alcohol in my home, so I just kind of started drinking, by myself, essentially.
So you started from alcohol.
I'm usually the bad influence on the other people. So.
So you started from alcohol.
Yes. Yeah, I started with alcohol and then started doing pain pills. And then I was in and out of rehab during high school. And then I got out and then I kind of was okay for a little while, but then I started hanging out with people who were doing harder drugs. And because I was around it and I was just so, like, what's the word? Self-destructive.
Game.
And game. Yeah. Yeah. I was just like, let's do it. Like, I didn't give a shit what it was. I was just game to try whatever, you know?
Yeah, in the hood, super reckless. We call that game.
Exactly. I was too game. Okay. There's a such thing, I swear.
Well, y'all hear that? Y'all hear that? Don't be too game. Know what you being game for.
Sometimes it's not good to be a yes man, because then it's just like you wind up like smoking PCP, smoking crack, and you're like, how did I get here?
Wow. For real. How did I get here? How can I get out?
Yeah, really though. Easy really, it's yeah, it's all fun and games.
To get out.
It's all fun and games until you're like strung out and then need to get high. That's when it's not really fun anymore, is when it goes from like, okay, you're using it to numb yourself, you're using it to have fun, you're using it to forget your problems, and then it itself becomes your problem. It's like, that's all that, like, once that becomes the only thing that makes you feel okay, then it's like, without it, you feel even worse than you did before. And that's such a shitty place to be in, because then it's like, you need this external force to make you feel okay inside. And like, it's just a temporary band-aid. It's really not like healing the part of you that isn't okay inside. You know what I mean?
Kind of like we felt when we sold drugs. Whenever something goes wrong, we go and get some drugs or sell some drugs. I'll go make some money.
Yeah.
And think that your problem is going to go away.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Understood. Like trying to put duct tape over a broken arm and you're like, it'll be fine. Just put a piece of gum and some duct tape and it'll be fine. And your arm's all like cracked and bent the wrong way and shit. Like, you're like, oh yeah, this will work. No one, you can't tell, right? Like,
wow.
I know. Someone in the comments asking about your movie. Like, are you currently working on a movie right now that's coming out?
I am. I've been working on this movie since about 92. I don't know, in 92, I was in prison and something came to me. Hey, you should do a movie. No, I know there what it go. Was. I know what it was. LA Times did an article, and they said something about my story was like a Hollywood movie.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, yeah. That would be cool to have a movie done about myself. And then I started chasing movies. So right now, we're supposed to be in pre-production, but I don't think we really are. we tentatively hired a director, Mike Ho, to direct. And that's what we had so far. And I've been like checking out actors who I think would make a good role, you know, play my role the right way. Cause I'm really a weird guy in a ways. and I need a weird guy to play my role. So I was thinking about somebody like Childish Gambino.
He's a really good, I used to follow him before he started rapping and he did comedy, and he's a really talented actor.
He is. I really like him. And I think he has that little weirdness about himself that he could pull my role off, you know?
Yeah.
But I think my role is going to be a tough role.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned about rappers taking my name. It's been four rappers to take my name so far.
I did not know that. Tell me about that. I did not know anything about that. I knew one for sure.
Well, you know, the guy calls himself Rick Ross, whose really name is William Roberts. Then we got Freeway. Then we got, we used to have Freeway Rich, but he changed his name to Rich the Factor. And then we had the guys out of Cincinnati who called themselves the Freeway Boys. So that's four. And then, you know, the TV show stole my story, Snowfall. They took a lot of my story and put in that TV show. So I've been ripped off a lot.
Oh, damn.
Yes, I've been ripped off a lot. But I'm still, you know, I'm still working on TV shows. I'm working on one now about some young boxers that I discovered. And what I'm going to do, the movie is going to be, this is a crazy scenario how I came up. I don't know. I come up with some weird stuff. But we're going to do a movie about how these kids' lives turn out with me directing their lives. That's what the movie's going to be.
Oh, what do you mean, you directing their lives? What does that mean?
Huh?
What does that mean, you directing their life?
Well, I'm their manager. So, you know, a manager's advisor.
You got it, got it, got it.
I point them in the direction, and then they got to follow it or they don't follow it. So,
okay.
I'm doing this movie where I'm directing their lives, and then their lives is going to go into this little thing that I have in my head that I feel like
interesting.
Huh?
I said that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be an interesting concept too. I know nobody's ever done that before.
Huh. That's awesome.
Busy phone. I got a busy phone. So, yeah, so I'm working on that right now. Me and one of my friends who was in prison with me, he wrote 45 books while we was gone. Great writer, Jimmy the Saint.
Wow, 45 books? That's a lot.
Books. He wrote one book in 30 days. We wrote a book called Black Scarface in 35 days.
That's awesome.
This kid can really write. So he's writing the script for me. Me and him, he's writing it. I'm just dictating. I'm the dictator. Nice. But yeah, I'm working on that right now. I want to go into comedy, not me being a comedian, but, you know, putting on comic shows and.
Nice.
I just try to do things that the people who have influence over people, where we can feed the people ideas. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that same industry of the podcast, man. I love that. Just like let everybody have a voice and talk. So I love that kind of like energy, man. It's cool.
Yeah, because the more information, you know, I was talking to my two youngest kids, one of their teachers, and I was telling them, like, we don't have to teach kids how to remember this shit. We teach them how to be critical thinkers, and then you give them a problem and they're going to sit down and figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather for them to figure the problem out than them to have to remember what the problem was, you know.
Right. Because then you're actually learning, not memorizing something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why yeah. do you want to memorize this shit? Let them learn how to figure things out, you know. And if you can figure out things, then you can figure life out. But yeah. if you're trying to memorize life, you can't memorize life.
I can't even remember anyone's name, let alone life. So it's just not going to work.
We got another question in the comments. Which rappers do you respect most from the 80s and 90s that are still relevant or active today? Like someone's asking in the comments.
Wow. I mean, I like a lot of them. I like Big Mike, Killer Mike. Man, I got a respect for a lot. I mean, I respect everybody. But my favorite would probably be, I used to love Sugar Hill Gang when I was coming up.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
That song, that song mimicked my life so closely, you know, like, you know, when they said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school. The teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke weed. I think it'd be cheaper to get a job and learn to be a street sweeper. Yeah. You know, I mean, that was my thinking. Like, I don't want to go to school. Hell with school. That's why I never learned how to read. You know, yeah. when I was in prison, I was like, why was you a dummy in school? You know, because I used to feel I was just like dumb and stupid and couldn't learn how to read. But after I got older, I understood that I never cared about reading.
Yeah.
You know, and if
did you get ADD?
Oh, no.
Oh, you cut out for a second.
When I was in prison, I started reading on a college level. I read 300 books okay. before I left prison.
Yeah.
I read the newspaper every day. So what I realized is a few things is that they didn't teach me the principles of reading, you know, my ABCs, my alphabets, how to pronounce them. And I didn't care about reading.
I was the same way.
I saw no way that reading was going to help me make a buck.
Yeah. Same with math.
I was looking for Hungry Jack biscuits. So.
Yeah. I always struggled with reading. I have dyslexia. And so even to this day, I really struggle with, it takes me a long time to read stuff because I'll mix the letters up. But for a long time, I thought I was dumb. Like I had to take like the special ed reading class in school. And like, I really felt like I was slower than the other kids. And I definitely can relate to just like, I just didn't give a shit about what I was being taught. Like, I also feel like the way they were teaching kids was very like one dimensional. Like I'm more of a visual learner. Yeah. Well, it's only geared towards a certain type of learning. And so if you don't learn that way, then it's like almost impossible to figure out how to navigate, how to learn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. So that's kind of me too. You know, I see me and you have a lot in common. I was in special ed. So, but yeah, those are some of the things that I'm going through. But right now, you know, life is for me, life is good. You know, I don't have the money I used to have. But money's not everything.
Well, I mean, with your shop, you might be Rick Rossing it up pretty soon.
Oh no! I plan on turning it up. I plan on turning it up. Don't get me twisted. I'm fighting with 15 veterans right now. They're veterans. They've been there for a while, so we gonna duke it out. I'm gonna be like Jake Paul with Mike Tyson. I'm gonna be trying to survive. Right now, I'm trying to survive. Hey, Jake better know how to run. Run, Jake, run. Duck, Jake, duck, Jake, duck.
Yeah.
Someone's asking in the comments, what's on your bucket list?
My bucket list to do? Wow.
That's a good question. That's a deep question, you know?
Tell that guy, don't be asking me no questions like that. he want me to tell my secrets. Well, I'm gonna tell one of the light ones. I'm working on another book right now. And I hope nobody gets offended, but I'm calling it Why Niggas Don't Want Money. That's the name of the book. What else I'm doing, I want to do. I definitely want to get my movie done. I want to do a TV series because I think that a TV series from my eyesight, the way I saw L.A., is going to be totally different. And I'd like to be one of the greatest philanthropists to ever, you know, have walked the planet. You know, I would like to help more people than anybody ever helped before. I mean, that would probably be my ultimate goal. You know, if I accomplish that, then, you know, let me go wherever I'm going. Yeah. I'll rest in peace.
Hell yeah.
And then I wouldn't mind if my kids won Wimbledon. You know, my two babies, one of them won Wimbledon. Wouldn't hurt. I wouldn't be like, oh, she won Wimbledon, crying. And I wouldn't do that. So that would be
another. We got another good question. When you found out about the CIA connection to your case and the Iran Contra issues, did it take a long time to process all those things? It might have been happening and trust people.
I thought Gary Webb was crazy. When Gary Webb had published the story that the CIA was involved with my case, I thought he was crazy. How could this kid from South Central LA who couldn't read, couldn't write, who had holes in his shoes in school, how could he be tied to the CIA? No way possible. Get out of here, Gary Webb. That's how I felt.
Damn, that's crazy.
It was only when the CIA admitted that they knew that the Contras were selling drugs, I say, damn.
Wow.
It was kind of hard. It was kind of hard to believe, you know, because I, even though I was in prison and I was mad at the government, I still felt that the government had the people's best interests at heart. Because that's supposed to be their job, you know?
Yeah.
I believe that people are supposed to do their job to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was one of those uneducated fools. That's what I would call it, an uneducated fool. You know, they got educated fools and then they got uneducated fools. So.
Yeah.
I was one of those.
Street smart. I think that's called street smarts.
Yes. Yeah, well, but that's how I felt about the CIA situation.
Yeah, that was crazy. So you didn't even know. When did you find out about that then?
When Gary Webb published the story.
Okay, was that 90? What year was that? Gary Webb.
96.
What year was it?
96.
Okay.
96. Okay. Yeah, I remember the year because I got sentenced the same year. They gave me a life sentence the same year. That's the only reason.
Damn.
I
nice.
I never forget the day that I lost my life.
God damn.
They put me on life support. Say, go to prison and be on life support and see if you can come out alive.
Jesus. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, exactly. I had to come out alive.
After that, you have to show them after that.
I didn't want to be rolled out on no table. Not out of that place. That was an ugly place.
Yeah.
It was like a place out of a horror film.
That's terrifying. Fuck. Oh, wow. That's nuts.
Was there any promo or anything you want to throw out before we get out of here, man? Like, I appreciate you going backwards in your career and taking your time to be on the cell phone podcast. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on. Everybody can go and buy my book. If you haven't read my book yet, it's definitely a book that I believe, you know what I'm saying, and I'm a little biased. I believe that everybody should read. It talks about the history. Not so much of the CIA because, you know, Gary Webb had already did that, and I didn't feel a need to go in his book and take his words out of his book. But I thought it was very important for people to understand how a person become a drug kingpin, how people become drug dealers and drug addicts, because I did live with drug addicts and drug dealers. So I thought it was very important for me to publish this book and to tell this story so that young kids, when I was thinking like this here, what if there was a book that I could have picked up when I got ready to get started selling drugs that could have told me from start to finish what was going to happen to my life, how different my life would have been.
Cool. That's awesome.
That's powerful, man. Like, well, check out Rick's book. Google him. Check out, he's got a movie coming out soon, it sounds like.
You have like a website with all the links for all your stuff? Or?
Oh, yeah. Go to freewayrickyross.com. Don't go to Amazon and buy my book, because Amazon, Jeff Bezos, is greedy. He takes all the money. He said, if you want me to sell your book, I want all the money. So go to my website. That way I can benefit from it, please.
Do you sell signed copies? Someone's asking in the comments.
Oh, absolutely. All you have to do is ask me to sign it, and I'll sign it for you. And you just tell me the name that you want it autographed in, and I'll do it. And if they come out to my dispensary, I'm there a lot. And this weekend, we're having an art show there. So you can come out, get a signed copy. I have my, I have my T-shirts. The real Rick Ross is not a rapper. I don't know if you can see that, but this is my famous T-shirt. The real Rick Ross is not a rapper. Because a lot of times people think Rick Ross
just is a rapper. Just set the record straight.
Yes, Rick Ross is not a rapper.
Do you have an audiobook version of your book?
It is. It is one up. They have to get that off of Amazon.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm going to do that. Don't buy it there then.
I'm joking. But, someone... That's pretty much it. I appreciate you having me on the show, man.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you, man.
Like, when the movie come out, we have to do this again. There we go. When the movie comes out, we have to do this again.
Yeah, definitely. Yes,
I'll definitely do that.
That'd be awesome.
If you have any book or whatever, any other promo you got, jump on, man. It's good to have you on here, man. And I appreciate everybody watching this. There's like thousands of people watching this cross-platform on a Tuesday night. So, I mean, I appreciate you guys spending your Tuesday night to watch this show with us. And the thousands of watches by the time I wake up in the morning, typically. So, I mean, I appreciate you all listening to this on whatever platform you're listening to.
Yeah.
Appreciate Rick. Nikki co-hosting and stuff. And obviously, sponsors and all that. So, I appreciate everything, man.
Thank you all for watching too. And if you can, go to Google and leave me a.
Oh.
Dispensary. Thank you.
You cut out in the last 5 seconds. So you said.
He said leave a review on his dispensary page on Google. I heard it.
Yep.
So,
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Comment. And leave me a comment. I need 50 more comments to go to the top of Google.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so everybody watch this mob up on. What's the dispensary called again for the people?
Freeway Ricky.
All right, Freeway Ricky Dispensary, California. Google that shit. Give them a good review. Leave a comment. So we give them the top of that. That'd be awesome. Like, and cool. Yeah, I'm gonna.
Nice.
Can you see it?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yes, likewise.
And it was good talking to you, too.
Yeah,
likewise.
Same.
Stay beautiful.
I'll try.
I wasn't talking to you.
Sure.
He's like, I'll try.
Thank you again. I enjoyed myself. I had a lot of laughs.
Yeah, no, likewise. This is fun. Thanks for coming on.
It's great to have a laugh.
It sure is. Okay. Bye.
Thanks for watching. It's Tuesday. It's been crazy getting back to work, so it's cool having these cool people on here. We'll be back when we're back. So thanks for watching live on Rumble. If you weren't, listen wherever you listen to the song. So thank you very much. Have a great night.